ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Friday, the 29th of August. I'm Rachel Mealy, coming to you from the lands of the Turrbal and Yuggera people in Brisbane. More than 20 people, including four children, have been killed in the Ukrainian capital overnight in one of the deadliest attacks on Kyiv in the war so far. Here's Europe correspondent Bridget Rollison.
The message from the skies was unmistakable. Russia isn't ready to stop fighting. Hundreds of drones and dozens of missiles were launched into Ukraine in an hours-long assault. Kyiv resident Volodymyr Abramov says he's grateful, even though his five-storey apartment block was destroyed.
It was a flash, and then everything started falling down. I don't understand how we're still alive.
20 buildings were hit in the attack in the centre of Ukraine's capital, killing more than a dozen people, including children. Rescuers spent the day searching rubble for survivors. 21-year-old Sofia Aklova wasn't expecting the bombardment.
Honestly, it's never happened before that they attacked so close to me.
World leaders have condemned the brutal attack after the European Union headquarters and British Council buildings in Kyiv were damaged. The UK has summoned Russia's ambassador to explain, while EU President Ursula von der Leyen says she was outraged over the strikes.
Two missiles hit in a distance of 50 metres of the delegation within 20 seconds. And this is another grim reminder of what is at stake. It shows that the Kremlin will stop at nothing to terrorize Ukraine.
NATO chief Mark Rutte says it's a clear sign Russian President Vladimir Putin is willing to continue killing innocent civilians.
We cannot be naive about Russia. We cannot be naive about Vladimir Putin.
Ukraine President Volodymyr Zelensky isn't. He said President Putin has chosen ballistics instead of the negotiating table. But Kremlin spokesman Dmitry Peskov says the country is still interested in peace.
Russia remains interested in continuing the negotiation process in order to achieve our goals through political and diplomatic means.
US envoy for Ukraine Keith Kellogg says Russia's egregious attacks threaten the peace President Donald Trump is pursuing. The barrage comes less than 2 weeks after Donald Trump met with Vladimir Putin face-to-face in Alaska to discuss ending the war. But hopes for further peace talks have stalled, with no progress on a bilateral meeting between the Russian and Ukrainian presidents, despite ongoing efforts from the White House. This is Bridget Rollison reporting for AM.
In northwest Victoria, residents in the town of Porepunkah are entering day four of a police-imposed lockdown as the search continues for suspected gunman Desi Freeman. The 56-year-old is alleged to have shot and killed two police officers on a rural property on Tuesday morning after detectives attended his property to execute a search warrant relating to historic sex offences. Reporter Kimberly Price is in Porepunkah. We spoke earlier.
Last night, it looked like there was some sort of search operation unfolding in the Porepunkah township. I drove past the scene at about 8:30 last night, and there was a number of police vehicles parked on one of the side streets in the township. Now, there is a temporary search command centre set up for police at a winery just outside of the township of Porepunkah, and there was a steady flow of police traffic between that parked area and that command centre. We are awaiting more details, but what I can tell you is that police have made it clear that they are going to offer Desi Freeman the option of a surrender plan if he contacts 000, if he calls in himself and hands himself into police. Victoria Police have told people that they do believe he is still in the area.
Has the family of Desi Freeman spoken at this stage?
We have heard from the estranged family of Desi Freeman. They have released a statement to the media saying they are devastated and sickened by the allegations that he shot dead two police officers and wounded another. Now, these estranged family members say they are actively seeking more information and working with police in their inquiries. Police have also warned people of the possibility of facing prosecution if they are found to be helping Desi Freeman.
And what are conditions like at the moment?
It remains wet, cold and muddy. It's currently 8 degrees here in Porepunkah. The area of search is dotted with mine shafts and caves. Now, they could be acting as a shelter from these wintry conditions, but this winter weather is expected to intensify heading into the weekend, making search efforts very difficult. And police have warned people that they should reconsider their ski trip plans this weekend. There has been a bit of snowfall across the Alpine region, but police are urging people to stay clear as their investigations remain ongoing and the Mount Buffalo National Park is closed.
And how's the community holding up?
Well, the community is entering day four of these lockdown measures. They are being urged to stay home unless travel is completely necessary. We've spoken to a few members of the public who have been in shock and disbelief that this has happened in their tight-knit community, but the community is abiding by police. They are happy to work with the police and stay home as this investigation, as this search mission for Desi Freeman remains active.
Kimberly Price there in Porepunkah. The federal government is pressing ahead with plans to divert children with developmental delays and autism off the National Disability Insurance Scheme, with consultations set to begin within weeks. The NDIS Minister, Mark Butler, has moved to reassure the community no one will be left behind. More from National Disability Affairs reporter Naz Campanella.
What colours?
Green.
Green.
As Perth mum Claire Mackay plays with her 4-year-old son Clark, she reflects on how far he's come.
He's got about 20 words now. We've got a little communication device that we use, which he can use fluently. He can communicate what he wants to eat.
Clark is autistic. Getting him a diagnosis and then support was a battle.
So it took us till Clark was about 2 before we even realised we needed to get help. It then took us 10 months to get on the NDIS.
Since becoming a participant of the NDIS a year ago, Clark's developed new skills thanks to speech therapy. But his mum worries the federal government's announcement to divert children with developmental delay or autism away from the scheme and into a new program called Thriving Kids threatens to undo all that progress.
So it really felt like the rug had been pulled out from underneath us, like we were making good progress, and now the whole thing has just had a shotgun put to it.
Thriving Kids is just one way the government is attempting to rein in spending on the $48 billion NDIS. It's due to start in July next year. The Minister Mark Butler has pointed out in his speech last week that the design process wouldn't need to start from a blank piece of paper because existing systems could be leveraged. He's pointed to the Inklings program in WA as a good example of a program providing early intervention services. It provides 10 sessions of support with an allied health professional like a speech pathologist. Professor Andrew Whitehouse is the deputy director of the Kids Research Institute and one of the developers of the Inklings program.
Allied health professionals go into those settings in which kids live, play and learn every day. So it helps those adults understand what the child might be thinking and then helps the parent or the adult around them change the way that they're interacting to ensure that they are interacting in a way with the child that is best for their learning.
Independent advocate and autistic woman Claire Gibellini led Australia's first national autism strategy, which was launched earlier this year. She's worried Thriving Kids will see a move away from the individualised support autistic children need.
Autism is incredibly diverse and people's needs are fluctuating and different. Individual supports, yeah, it might front load the costs, but in the long term, we know that it actually leads to better outcomes.
And she wants to ensure the community is consulted.
To show us that no family is going to be worse off, that no children are going to be worse off.
In a statement, the Minister Mark Butler has told the ABC that an advisory group will meet next month to begin work with the community on the design of the program. He wants to reassure parents that he's determined to build a system that supports children and their families.
Naz Campanella. The former West Coast Eagles Premiership player Adam Hunter, who died earlier this year, has been posthumously diagnosed with chronic traumatic encephalopathy, a condition associated with repeated head trauma. An examination of his brain has revealed several lesions consistent with stage 2 CTE. Bridget MacArthur reports.
Can you straighten that top one up?
I tried, and I went to the left, to the right, to the left.
That's what I did yesterday.
Photos of AFL star Adam Hunter cover his parents' walls, from young teen to a broad-shouldered West Coast Eagles backman, the 2006 premiership shot sitting pride of place. But what they don't show are the invisible changes happening in his brain, caused by repeated head knocks, something his mum and stepdad, Joanne and Rod Brown, say were frequent.
When you see your son run onto the football field and within 5 minutes he's on the stretcher being carried off, shaking and convulsing, and yeah, it's pretty upsetting. But that's the game. That's the game.
Adam Hunter died in February, aged 43. Early coronial findings indicate he died from methamphetamine-related heart failure, having struggled with substance abuse on and off throughout his life. But a posthumous examination of his brain confirms he was also battling another, more elusive beast.
We donated his brain to the Brain Institute because Adam used to say to me that he thought he had CTE.
The 43-year-old's brain had several lesions consistent with stage 2 CTE, or chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which can only be diagnosed after death. Associate Professor Michael Buckland, who founded the Australian Sports Brain Bank, says it's a disease often linked to high-contact sport.
It's thought that over many years, particularly playing a collision sport, that you're exposed to thousands of head knocks. Most of those probably won't give you any signs or symptoms. With low stage CTE, they often present with symptoms that overlap with mental health symptoms, anxiety, depression, rage, poor impulse control. We've had many families tell us that their loved one sought some relief through drugs or alcohol. It seems to be, in a way, treating their own symptoms.
Hunter's brain also showed signs of cortical sparing CTE, classed as high stage, a subtype Professor Buckland says was only recently discovered, which can carry more severe early onset mental health issues.
We returned to the brains, such as when cortical sparing CTE was only described so recently, we were able to go back through our archives and assess for that specific subtype. We ourselves are doing research to try and develop biomarkers for confident diagnosis during life. That's all based on research using the brain tissue.
Professor Buckland says he'd like to see the AFL and other sporting bodies adopt specific CTE intervention protocols.
In the US, they've already started limiting full contact training to only at 15 minutes or so a week. That would be a very simple and practical way to start addressing this cumulative exposure, particularly in the professionals.
The AFL says the league has changed its rules to reduce the amount of avoidable high contact and committed $25 million to research the effects on brain health.
Bridget MacArthur. More and more Australian families have turned to melatonin supplements to help their children get a good night's sleep. But a US-based online retailer has just suspended sales to Australia. Tanya Dendrinos reports.
For most parents, sleep is the holy grail.
I have found that melatonin has assisted us getting our toddler to sleep when it's been particularly challenging.
And this Sydney-based mum of two isn't alone. Doctors say melatonin supplement use for kids has surged over the past few years, with many families purchasing it online in the form of gummies. That was the case for Kylie Barlow. Her youngest daughter was diagnosed with ADHD, and melatonin gummies, such as from American retailer iHerb, were recommended by friends.
My daughter had adverse side effects, including anger, a lot of rage the next day, meltdown. meltdowns and tantrums. And it wasn't until we had been taking for a while that we wondered if there was something else in the gummies that were triggering this, or it was just the way they were made.
Melatonin is a hormone the body produces naturally, which helps regulate the sleep-wake cycle. But data from WA suggests there's been a significant rise in melatonin overdoses, mainly among children, causing side effects such as drowsiness, headaches, upset tummies and nightmares. Kylie Barlow says she can see how this might be happening, particularly now her daughter is only taking prescribed melatonin.
The compound of melatonin is given to us via our paediatrician with a script, and it's 1 milligram. So potentially I could see how families could, you know, give their child 5 milligrams not knowing.
iHerb is suspending all sales of its melatonin gummies to Australia until it reviews its order protocols. Dr. Tim Jones, the Chair of Child and Young Persons Health for the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners, says it's a good move.
The absence of long-term data means that we can't consider melatonin to just be safe. But I feel like there's been this trend over time to view melatonin as just a natural supplement. We have animal models suggesting that melatonin does have a fertility impact.
Is there also a concern around the fact parents are ordering these products from overseas?
There was a large review of the quality of online ordered melatonin products in America earlier this year. And what it found was that melatonin products can contain anywhere from 1% to 1,000% of the dose that they indicate.
A spokesperson for Australia's Therapeutic Goods Administration said melatonin is only approved for use in children as a prescription medicine in limited circumstances, adding that melatonin, be it in gummies or otherwise, is not approved for use in Australia for children for any other use, saying the TGA has not evaluated the safety or efficacy when it comes to broader use for kids.
Tanya Dendrinos. The head of the United States' most important health authority has been sacked but is refusing to leave in a standoff with the Trump administration. For more, I spoke a short time ago to our senior reporter Ben Knight in Washington.
Well, Rachel, you could argue that the CDC has been on a collision course with Robert F. Kennedy Jr. ever since he was appointed to the job by Donald Trump. He was, of course, a known vaccine skeptic. Since he's taken the office, he's taken actions that follow that course, including pulling funding for mRNA vaccine research, changing some vaccine policy. Now, what led to this one was his conversation with the director of the CDC, a woman named Susan Menares, who was only confirmed in the job by the US Senate 4 weeks ago. In that conversation, we understand he essentially required her to commit to accept the findings of a vaccine recommendation committee. Now, it's not a new committee, but its membership has been reconstituted by the new health secretary, and that includes some new members who are vaccine skeptics. So the expectation is, or the prediction is, that when those recommendations come out, there will be a winding back of vaccine recommendations in the United States. Now, the director of the CDC essentially said, look, I can't commit to accepting the findings of something. I don't know what they are yet. But not only that, she was instructed to sack 5 of her own senior staff, which she refused to do. So that then led to her being sacked by Robert F. Kennedy. She said, you can't sack me, only the president can. And it looks like the president has done just that. And since then, we've seen 4 members of the CDC senior staff also resign in protest. Let's hear what Robert F. Kennedy had to say about this.
The agency is in trouble and we need to fix it, and we are fixing it, and it may be that some people should not be working there anymore. There's really a deeply, deeply embedded, I would say, malaise at the agency.
That's Robert F. Kennedy Jr. It's interesting he talks about a malaise at the agency. He also talked about how incredibly highly regarded the CDC, in his view, was, in the view of others, still is. As you would know, this is the highest health authority in the United States. It deals with everything from Ebola epidemics to vaccine recommendations to public health. And its findings and its science is highly regarded around the world. He doesn't believe that's the case. So as I say, there was a standoff, the director saying, you can't sack me, only Donald Trump can. That question was put to the White House spokeswoman, Caroline Leavitt, today. Here's how she responded.
She was not aligned with the president's mission to make America healthy again. And the secretary asked her to resign. She said she would, and then she said she wouldn't. So the president fired her, which he has every right to do.
White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt, and before her, senior reporter Ben Knight in Washington. And that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Rachel Mealy.
Hello, it's Sam Hawley here, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. With house prices quite often up around the $1 million mark or more, saving a 20% deposit is asking a lot. Well, this week the government expanded a 5% deposit scheme for first home buyers. Today, finance expert Alan Kohler on how it works and why he's a huge fan of it. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.